Friends, aren't you ready to get back to normal? And it appears that we are getting closer to that possibility. The numbers of people who have had the virus, survived, and are currently immune, combined with the numbers of people who have been fully vaccinated, is growing. Furthermore, I read earlier this week that there will be enough vaccinations for everyone by the summer. At the same time, we're seeing the numbers remaining at the lowest point they have been in months. A return to normal seems to be on the horizon. Aren't you thankful? But this question remains. Have we realized how unwell we truly are? For it doesn't matter how many masks we wear, or how tightly they fit around our nose and mouth, or that we have received one or two vaccine shots. Safety is not the pathway to well-being. You realize, friends, I'm not simply talking about physical well-being, but neither am I discounting it. Presently, our version of safety has only brought division, even while we claim the mantra, we're all in this together. And so I ask again, have we realized how unwell we truly are? It doesn't matter who the president is or how they got there. The selfish agendas that fuel the fires of our political environment, regardless of which side of the aisle you agree, fosters the injustices we say we hate. Politics is not the pathway to well-being. Friends, please understand that I'm not seeking to undermine the importance of our political leadership, but neither do I establish it as the pathway to our well-being. Presently, our politics has only cultivated hatred. Like a garden overcome by weeds, it only produces the fruitless deeds of darkness. Hear the question again. Have we realized how unwell we truly are? It doesn't matter how much money we receive, how low the mortgage rates are, or how well the stock market does. Prosperity is not the path to well-being. Friends, hear me. I'm not saying our economy isn't valuable, but neither am I saying it is vital. Our present economics only accelerates greed. Capitalists and socialists alike feed on its promises. The capitalist says, "What's mine is not yours." The socialist says, "What's yours is mine." One has a tendency to withhold generosity. The other has a tendency to steal blessing. Friends, do we realize how unwell we truly are? And yet, I wonder if maybe this pandemic has uncovered, made atonement of the reality of our need to be made well again. Maybe the journey that we've been on during this pandemic has revealed the pathway to well-being. We don't achieve it on our own. We don't bring well-being to ourselves. We must look to Scripture to see how God brings well-being. And for this, friends, I invite us to turn to two texts. The first text is our psalm, and that is Psalm 30. And our second text is going to be 2 Samuel 6. I would encourage you that if you are sitting next to someone that you are close to, that I would encourage you, one of you to open your Bible to Psalm 30 and the other to 2 Samuel 6, so that one of you can share with the other the text that you don't have open, and they can share with you that way. So in this way, you can minister to each other. Allow me to read Psalm 30 to you. A psalm, a song for the dedication of the temple of David. I will exalt you, O Lord, for you lifted me out of the depths. and did not let my enemies gloat over me. O Lord my God, I called to you for help, and you healed me. O Lord, you brought me up from the grave. You spared me from going down into the pit. Sing to the Lord, you saints of his. Praise his holy name. For his anger lasts only a moment, but his favor lasts a lifetime. Weeping may remain for a night, but rejoicing comes in the morning. Verse 6, when I felt secure, I said, I will never be shaken. O Lord, when you favored me, you made my mountain stand firm. But when you hid your face, I was dismayed. To you, O Lord, I called. To the Lord, I cried for mercy. What gain is there in my destruction, in my going down into the pit? Will the dust praise you? Will it proclaim your faithfulness? Hear, O Lord, and be merciful to me. O Lord, be my help. You have turned my wailing into dancing. You removed my sackcloth and clothed me with joy, that my heart may sing to you and not be silent. O Lord my God, I give you thanks forever. Friends, we're going to be dealing with the well-being offering, or as it's often translated, particularly in the NIV, the peace offering, the well-being offering. In our text here in Psalm 30, the place to begin is in the middle, verse 6. David says, when I felt secure, I said, I will never be shaken. His attitude is one of self-confidence, self-assurance, self-reliance. For he's strong, he's victorious, he's king. Nothing could shake such a man. He has been anointed by God to be king and has brought deliverance to God's people as king. And yet, one of the striking elements of this psalm is that although God is exalted at the beginning and praised forever at the end, he is not at the center. David's security is at the center, his unshakable life at the core. This is not insignificant, because this entire psalm is about being shaken to the core. And so at the center, David says, I am not shaken. And yet the psalm, by the way, begins with a word, a psalm there. It translates as to pluck, as you would a harp in order to make the strings vibrate. In other words, it's a psalm that shakes us up. That's the impetus. That's the point of this psalm. So when we read David's self-assurant claim that he could never be shaken, the psalm in of itself is that he has been shaken. And that's true for us, that God intends to shake us. And what's he seeking to do? Is to show where our well-being really lies, where our peace really is established. This psalm has many places that it could be connected to, several historical background possibilities for Psalm 30. And we shouldn't be surprised by this. The psalms operate this way. They give them, they're given to be prayers prayed in a multifaceted history of the people of God. And so in this way, psalms are given to us as prayers to be prayed in the historical background of our lives, just as it was in their lives. And one of the historical possibilities for Psalm 30 is 2 Samuel 6, where David is bringing the Ark of the Covenant, the Ark of the Lord, the Ark of God, back to Jerusalem. What you should know prior to our text is that David is being established as king. And so he has been mocked by surrounding people, and God gives victory over that people, and he retains Jerusalem. That the Philistines have come again to fight against David, and he routs them, first of all, to their face. So they line up for battle. David heads out and beats them face to face in battle. The Philistines rally their troops. They come out a second time in order to face David. David inquires of the Lord, and the Lord says, go around and then attack them from behind. And in this way, they again win. One of the implications is that from front to back, God has delivered the Philistines into David's hands. He's given him total victory. So from front to back, meaning everything in between, the Philistines have been given into the hands of David. That David now has a palace that he's residing in, that in every way, David is being established as king. So he's overcome his mockers, he's overcome his enemies. He's being established before his own kingdom, before his own people. So he's been given victory because even Israel is divided. And so you have him uniting. So in every way, David is being established as king. And it's from this posture that we hear David say, when I felt secure, I said, I will never be shaken. He's trying to establish his kingship, and in every way, it is being established. And then we get to this narrative in 2 Samuel 6. David gathers together 30,000 men, and he sends them on a journey to retrieve the Ark of the Lord. And they are going to restore the Ark of the Lord, this manifest presence of God, this symbol of God's presence. It was going to be restored to the city of Jerusalem. David sends this group of 30,000 people to go and get it. They set the ark on a new cart and they begin their journey back to Jerusalem. Now it's important to see here that they are rejoicing. If you look here, verse 3 of chapter 6 of 2 Samuel, they set the ark of God on a new cart and brought it from the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. Uzzah and Ahio, sons of Abinadab, were guiding the new cart with the ark of God on it. And Ahio was walking in front of it. David and the whole house of Israel were celebrating with all of their might before the Lord, with songs and with harps and lyres, tambourines, sistrums, and cymbals. A fascinating note here is that all of these instruments are instruments that vibrate or shake in order to accomplish their purpose. So a sistrum, you say, well, what is that? It's kind of like a maraca. Okay, you would shake it in order, you pluck a harp in order to make it vibrate. You shake a tambourine. You clash cymbals, right? So in every way, these are instruments that accomplish their purpose by being shaken or being clashed together in order to vibrate and make their sound. Again, this is a restatement of what the psalm is all about. They are about to be shaken. And what could possibly shake them out of their own sense of not being well? They have a sense of well-being, but they really are not well. They're traveling on their way. And as they go, they come to a place of which the oxen stumble. And there is an act that happens there where Uzzah reaches out to steady the ark of God, and he struck dead. And we go, whoa, what just happened? David, hearing this, by the way, the text reads that David sent 30,000 men to bring back the ark. And although he celebrated with them, he's at the palace while he sends his emissaries to return the ark. David has them set the ark aside to Obed-Edom's house. He's blessed. David, being afraid of the Lord, angry at the Lord, refuses to accept at that point God's presence. He says, I can't. Who can have the presence of God come to them? He's angry and he is afraid. And so he pouts. 3 months, he pouts. What's he pouting about anyways? I don't necessarily think that he's pouting about Uzzah's death. Because everything up to this point in time is David becoming increasingly secure. I will never be shaken. I said, I am secure. I'll never be shaken. Look at this. I've won victory after victory. I've silenced my mockers. I've built a house for my name. Man, I have got it going. There is nothing that can shake me. And then he sends for the ark of God to come. And that, man, that's the kicker. Not only have I established my kingdom, but I'm going to bring in God's presence that then solidifies that. So what's he pouting about? He's pouting that in this way, his kingdom is now under question. What he thought he had established was now in question because the ark of God had shaken him. Had shaken how established his kingdom just might be. And so he pouts for 3 months. And in that place of being shaken, he comes to a place where he's hearing of the blessing of Obed-Edom's house and says, I've got to go back and bring back the ark. We know some things that have happened. The result of him being shaken is there's a couple things that happen in our text. The first thing that happens in our text is that David goes to bring the ark back. He doesn't just send emissaries on his behalf. He himself goes. You see this in verse 12 and 13. So David went down and brought up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. Verse 13, when those who were carrying the ark of the Lord had taken six steps, he sacrificed a bull and a fattened calf. So he goes down himself, and then he operates as a priest that after they've taken six steps, he sacrifices a bull and a fattened calf. David is there. That's the first thing that we should recognize. The second thing that we should recognize, verse 15, while he and the entire house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord, listen, with shouts and the sound of trumpets. This is different. He sends 30,000 to bring back the ark on his behalf. And the music by which they play is all things that are shaken. This time, they blow trumpets. To blow trumpets is to announce that which is coming, to announce the Lord's arrival. And so even the music changes. It goes from that which is shaken to that which is blown, proclaimed, announcing that the Lord is coming. There's another thing that we should notice, and this gets us, we're going to come back and we're going to address the well-being offering. As the ark of the Lord was entering the city, Michal, daughter of Saul, watched from a window. And when she saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she despised him in her heart. Now that's going to become important, by the way. She's going to rebuke her husband when he comes home to bless their house. They brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it. And David sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings before the Lord. After he had finished sacrificing the burnt offerings and fellowship offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord Almighty. Then he gave a loaf of bread, a cake of dates, and a cake of raisins to each person in the whole crowd of Israelites, both men and women, and all the people went to their homes. And then David returned home to bless his household. Michal, daughter of Saul, came out to meet him and said, "How the king of Israel has distinguished himself today, disrobing in the sight of the slave girls of his servants as any vulgar fellow would." David said to Michal, "It was before the Lord who chose me rather than your father or anyone from his house when he appointed me ruler over the Lord's people, Israel. I will celebrate before the Lord. I will become even more undignified than this, and I will be humiliated in my own eyes. But by these slave girls you spoke of, I will be held in honor." And then verse 23, "And Michal, daughter of Saul, had no children to the day of her death." That's going to become an important point, okay? So what we see here is David goes down and he himself is going to bring back the ark of the Lord. And some things have changed. One of those things that has changed is that they've changed their instruments. Is they're going to blow trumpets in order to announce the coming of the Lord. Another thing that happens is that David offers a sacrifice, and the sacrifice that he offers is the well-being offering. And he offers it, interestingly, he offers it not as a king would. He offers it as a priest would. And so what he offers as a priest is that he is operating not as a ruler, but rather as a servant. So David, who in the psalm says, when I felt secure, I said, I will never be shaken. He was interested in the establishment of his rule, his kingdom, his authority, is now saying, it is better to be a servant of the Lord than a ruler in my house. There's a radical change that happens in David. How do we know this? David says, wearing a linen ephod, this is the clothing of a servant. So David offers the animals that were consistent with the priest. So he is operating as a servant of the Lord, and the clothing that he has put on is the clothing of a servant. For those of you that still have Psalm 30 open, when he talks about praising the Lord forever at the end, it says that he has been clothed with joy. And so the clothing of the servant is one of joy. Moving then back here to 2 Samuel 6, David wearing a linen ephod, the clothing of a servant, offering the sacrifices of a servant for the benefit of the people, has this clothing that brought joy. And so the result is what? He danced before the Lord with all of his might. When we serve the Lord, there is great joy that inhabits our person, and we can't help but rejoice in his presence. So he offers the sacrifice of a servant. He puts the clothing on of a servant, and the result is great rejoicing. He dances before the Lord, and he dances before the Lord, announcing the Lord is coming. The Lord is coming to town. Might be a better way to say that. And then, as the ark of the Lord was entering the city of David, Michal, the daughter of Saul, watched from a window. And when she saw the king leaping and dancing before the Lord, she despised him in her heart. Later, we're going to find out that she doesn't have any children. David. One of the elements of the peace offering is that the peace offering was an offering that then was to be prepared. It was to prepare a meal that would then be eaten together. Okay, so when you offered the well-being offering, it was then prepared to be shared. That makes sense, right? If you have been made well, if you were unwell and then you were made well, you want to rejoice with those that are around you. And so when God transforms a situation, when he shakes a situation that is unwell and then teaches us what it looks like then to be made well, this offering of well-being is prepared and then it is shared. That happens. They get back to town, and David gave a loaf of bread. He gives a cake of dates, a cake of raisins to each person in the whole crowd of Israelites, both men and women, and all their people went to their homes. They had been made well, and they were sharing in the well-being that God had provided. God had made them well. He had to shake them to show them how unwell they were, but then to prepare them to be made well by himself. What was unwell was David's seeking to establish himself. He sought to demonstrate his well-being by continuing to establish his superiority. He sought to establish his well-being by revealing how great he truly was. And that had to be shaken. To say you're not as well as you think you are because you think you can establish it on your own terms. I am the God who establishes well-being. So then let's deal with Michael. She watches the king who is dancing before the Lord as they come into town and says that she despises him in her heart. You see, she had the same interest that King David did. That your role as king is to establish your authority. Your role as king is to make sure that everybody knows that you're the most powerful person in the kingdom. Your responsibility is to make sure that everybody knows that things go through you. That's what she's interested in. So she despises him in her heart because what she sees is one who is coming as a servant of the people, not as ruler. And she despises that. This is not the way you act as a king. This is not the way you work to establish power. This is not the way that you work if you want to get your way. This is not it, David. You should be ashamed of yourself, revealing yourself as a servant of the people. You ought to be ashamed. That's not how you establish power. That's not how you engender authority. So he comes home to bless his home with the well-being that God has established. That God has established well-being, not David. Michael rejects it. You know how you establish well-being in this society? How do you know that you're doing well? You have babies. That's how you establish well-being in your home. You have babies. What's it said about Michael? She doesn't have any one of them. She rejects God's well-being. She refuses to live in the path of God's well-being. No, it's about establishing yourself. It's about establishing your power. It's about establishing your rule. It's about getting your own way. That's how you are. That's how you get well-being. No, it's about being a servant. I'll be even more undignified than this in serving the people of God because he's king and I'm his servant. And he rejoices. It's not insignificant. If you continue reading in 2 Samuel, we have the example then of Michael who refuses the God who brings well-being. She has no children. And then chapter 7, verse 1. As the king was settled in his palace. And I want you to pay attention to the second part. And the Lord had given him rest from all his enemies around him. You see, David, prior to bringing the ark to Jerusalem, verse 6, when I was secure, I said, I will never be shaken. I've defeated the Philistines from front to back. I've silenced my mockers, and I've recaptured Jerusalem. Now I'm bringing back the Ark of the Lord, the tangible expression of God. This is going to solidify my rule. And God shakes him up and he says, you cannot establish your own well-being. The only one who can establish your well-being is me. And so he goes down and he brings up the ark. And he does so by announcing that he is a servant. He sacrifices as a priest, a servant. He wears the accompaniment of a servant. He dances with joy, which is the clothing of a servant. And he ushers, he leads back to Jerusalem as a servant. And then, learning what it means to be a servant of the king, then we're told in 2 Samuel 7:1, God established his palace, settled him in his palace, and gave him rest from all his enemies. It's at that point in time when he recognized that servant, being a servant of the living God, that's what brings well-being, that God establishes his throne. Whoa, that's cool, right? There's something, one last thing. There is scholarly debate around the six steps. After the first six steps, it says that he offered a sacrifice, right? So we're not sure if it was after the first six steps or every six steps. Scholars are uncertain of that, and so they debate these sorts of things, right? Isn't that wonderful? Don't you want to go to seminary and debate whether it was, hey, it was just the first six or it was every six? Isn't that a wonderful scholarly conversation? But there's something really significant here, that they stop after the first six steps and they offer this well-being offering. It's not insignificant that the way in which David's rule is established in 7:1 is that God gave him rest from all his enemies. In the creation narrative, 6 days he created all things, and on the seventh he rested. One of the implications that's drawn out by this is they take six steps and then they rest. Friends, the implication is that for 6 days we seek to work as hard as we possibly can in order to establish our well-being. And then, as an illustration for us, they stop and they say, it doesn't matter how hard we work, we can never establish the well-being that we need. And so they stop and they say, God, you're the one who brings well-being. Friends, that's a pretty good lesson for us. The only one who can establish well-being in our lives is God. Doesn't matter how hard you work. 6 days, you can work your tail off. You can take away sleep from your life. You can get up earlier in your life. You can schedule more meetings. You can get more mentoring and more coaching and more education and more. It doesn't matter how hard you work. You will never be able, I will never be able to establish the well-being of God unless I stop and say, you're the well-being maker. You're the one who makes me well. And sometimes, friends, he has to shake us up because we've become convinced that we can make ourselves well. So don't be surprised if you are like David in verse 6, who says, when I felt secure, I said, I will never be shaken. Don't be surprised that you encounter a God who shakes you in order to reestablish that he's the one who makes you well. You don't. Maybe the question we should ask is not, do you realize how unwell we truly are? Maybe the question is, do you realize who the well-being giver is who shakes you? Are you being shaken today? Maybe rather than saying, God, stop it, maybe it's a time for us to recognize that our six steps can only take us so far. And we stop and we say, God, I am your servant. Make me well again. Because I'm unwell in these aspects of my life. Make me well again. And so as we sing, I guess I would ask, is there any areas in your life where you need God to make you well again? And if so, take a posture of servitude today. Say, God, I'm your servant. I'm not going to try to establish myself. I'll do everything that I can, but I know that everything I can will not be good enough to establish my well-being. And so I'm submitting my whole self, the burnt offering. I'm submitting all of my work. I'm stopping. I'm saying, God, you're the one who brings well-being into my life.